Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for our annual conversation about the year so far by JB.
Is it just me, or is that a lonely-looking sky?
Because this is an annual show where every year we talk about the year so far, I thought, let's just repeat our 2013 show. Let's not talk about 2015 so far. Let's talk about January through April 2013.
Oddly enough,
yes.
I think that's very accurate
because
a year ago, and this is the one thing I didn't print out, a year ago we were euphoric, and even this early we were predicting great things.
Yeah.
And as of April, really good things had come out.
Okay.
And we were like, the year so far is good. The State of the Union is good. But this year we have a different message.
Before we get to that, if this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. We publish new stuff every day. We're not just a podcast, although you can find our podcast on Wednesdays at fthismovie.net or in the iTunes store or on Stitcher or however you listen to podcasts. But we have written content for people who still read every day. JB writes a column every Tuesday.
There's an old guy who goes on and on about movies I've never heard of.
That is Mark Ahn.
You might want to think about dropping him.
Mark Ahn. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at F This Movie. Like our page on Facebook if you haven't already. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. I think that's all of it. Everybody's tired of this particular speech that I give every week. I try to keep it fast, everyone.
And so because there has not been a surplus of quality films in the theater.
Yeah.
I've been catching up on a lot of archival releases and lately have been binging on spaghetti westerns.
Nice.
And so I have invented a spaghetti western that stars you,
okay.
Sir.
I'm in.
And you come to town and you are grieving a lost love. And at the beginning of the film, you are picking violets for her. And no one knows you're a gunfighter. And the rough thugs who rule the town start to derisively call you Violetta.
I like it.
And so the film is called Violetta.
I like it.
And that is your name. And at the end of the film, spoiler alert, you paint the town violet. And
does everyone have purple blood?
No.
Damn it.
But you wind up killing all the thugs and then raping them.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Very disturbing.
Took a dark turn.
So you'll excuse me if occasionally, for no apparent reason, I will break into Violetta.
I like it.
The one with the violets.
We can get Louis Bakalov to do the song.
I was hoping for Neil Diamond.
What have you seen anything good lately besides this imaginary movie that you wrote in your head that I'm excited to be a part of?
This shows you how bad the year is so far.
I'm writing my own movies.
I'm inventing my own reality. Last weekend was the Sci-Fi Spectacular.
Yes.
Which is the little brother of the Music Box Massacre. And recently we learned that the manager at the Music Box, the happiest place on earth, left to take an outstanding job in California. He's going to be in charge of Sony Repertory.
Which is cool. Hopefully he does some great stuff. I'd like to see wide release repertory.
Yeah, send out some stuff.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder if they're going to do a 24-hour marathon, or will we return to the massacre being the only game in town? That'll be interesting to see. But the Sci-Fi Spectacular is the little brother of the massacre, and this year it was at the Patio Theater. And for the most part, it was delightful. It's always good to see those films on a big screen with a big audience. And boy, was there a big audience, which surprised me. Because has anyone else noticed that April 18th this year was everything?
I did not.
There were all of these. Russell Crowe was in town.
Oh, yeah.
Chilling for Water Diviner. And it was Record Store Day. And it was the Sci-Fi Spectacular. There were 65 things going on. Risky, I believe, has decided to convert, and so he was having some sort of baptism in his apartment.
Yeah.
But the Sci-Fi Spectacular was a lot of fun, and I would have to say that the most recent film I saw, because of you, sir.
Me?
Yeah.
Is it Violetta?
You could say that I went to see that movie in my brain.
Violetta. The one with the violets.
No, based on your absolute love and your review, I went to see Furious 7.
Okay.
And I was surprised.
Ironic, because I didn't love that one, but go ahead.
But you love.
I love those movies, yeah.
You know, I was reacting to being in a theater with you several times when they were showing the trailer.
I remember.
And you were just, there was like light coming out of your pores.
I remember.
So.
This was the first, you should clarify, this is the first Fast and Furious movie
exactly.
You've seen. Jumping right in on 7.
Jumping right in on 7. And I have to say, except for maybe one thing, which I caught on to pretty quick, you really don't need to. I really don't think I was missing out on anything.
No, not really. You were able to follow along.
It's a band of ragamuffins, and this one woman had amnesia for a little while, but
right.
I'm on board.
Yeah. They have to hack into the God's Eye device. That's an important thing to keep in mind.
Clearly, dialogue is not the film's strong suit.
No.
But I have to say, that film has two of the most amazing action sequences I've ever seen.
I mean, the mountaintop chase, and then are you counting the one in the buildings?
Yeah.
Okay.
Primarily the bus thing where they're chasing the bus is just...
Yeah.
And it's clear that, I mean, it might be augmented a little bit by CGI, but those are real vehicles going down a real mountain. And I was surprised by how fun it was, and I don't think at this point it's a spoiler. I was actually surprised at how moving that thing at the end was.
Yeah.
I thought that was a kind of a classy way to do it.
It was very tastefully handled.
Yeah, that there were a lot of other ways they could have done it.
That movie has made over $1 billion already.
Right, which is the other thing, because, of course, it's Universal, and I hold Universal close to my heart. It is the single highest grossing film in Universal's history.
I mean, what? What?
So in the spirit...
In under 20 days, it made $1 billion.
In the spirit of Disney suddenly making everything Frozen, I'm looking forward to Universal Studios... sort of upping the Fast and Furious quotient,
sure.
Because so far, when you're on the tram tour, they take you past some of the car vehicles, and they mention the Fast and Furious films, of course, are Universal, and you get to see the cars just sitting there. And then at night, I think they do a little stunt show with some cars. But clearly, this would warrant something a little bigger.
It's going to replace the Universal monsters. They're gone. They're replaced by the cast of the Fast and the Furious. Even every toy you have in your house overnight is magically going to transform into a bust of Vin Diesel and Michelle Rodriguez.
No, what I pictured was, because the Universal's really having a hard time jump-starting the monster franchise with all these misfires, that they would combine the series and have Frankenstein.
I have no friends, have family.
And that's just Vin Diesel, right? Adam Riske is shilling for a monster Fast and Furious crossover, which he has dubbed Fastlevania, which I think works. It's going to come right before they go into space in part 10.
I do not want to start weeping into the windscreen of this microphone, but recently in California, they closed the House of Horrors, which I'm very disappointed by. It was open for about 7 years. I don't know why. I guess they're going to make it in another restaurant or something. But
Fast and Furious themed restaurant.
Well, I haven't heard that yet.
But, I haven't either.
You have enough restaurants. You know, you're closing my favorite attraction. Let's just move on.
Anything else besides Furious 7?
Yes.
Okay.
Again, on your recommendation and the recommendation of the entire internet, I went to see It Follows.
Oh.
And the strangest thing happened. You know, these things get built up and they're all hyped and people are already claiming it's the greatest thing ever made. And I think I was responding to that, and also that I made it a double feature at the Music Box and I had sat through a disappointing film and then went right into It Follows. As the title might suggest, the film has stuck with me and it is growing in my appreciation as I think back to it. And also... preparing for this podcast, thinking about everything else that's come out this year so far, it's again growing in my estimation, yeah. And it's making me wonder what I was expecting.
Okay.
Because I think part of it was I was expecting something very different and wasn't prepared for what it was. But what it is really, really good.
It's great that people are talking it up, that I was going to say William Friedkin called it the scariest movie ever, but that was The Babadook. But it's great that it's getting all this coverage and all this press, and I want that, and I want it to open wide, and I want people to go see it. But at the same time, that ends up happening where expectations then are increased and everyone is just like, well, that wasn't the best thing I ever saw. So therefore it's not. And the same thing happened to Babadook last year. It's unfortunate that we're getting.
I think you had said that the Friedkin recommendation was the kiss of death.
It was, man. And no, I mean, you know,
no film that can live up to
and
that.
God bless him for saying it and trying to champion that movie. But
I'm beginning.
Everyone's reacting to his quote and not the movie.
I'm beginning to think that at least for horror films, we should all band together and have, well, we can decide later how many weeks it will encompass, but we need to have a nationwide moratorium on horror films. Let's say 4 weeks.
Okay.
A new horror film comes out.
And no one talks about it?
You got 4 weeks.
Okay.
To see it untouched.
Right.
Of course, that'll never happen because on the internet, everyone wants to be first and things, but one can dream. Of course, you can just do the old-fashioned thing and sort of avoid
yes.
reading things.
Yes.
Which takes us back again to another famous Patrick Bromley moments. I am teaching class. I am a high school teacher. I'm not very good at it. And I'm sitting there in the last period, and my phone comes to life, and I get a text from Mr. Bromley. Don't read anything. Don't talk to anyone. Go see Cabin in the Woods now.
Oh, yeah.
And I left school, and I went to Cabin
Thank
in the Woods.
You.
And I was so happy that I did, because I can only imagine what people would have said about it. But maybe we can reach a conclusion that really good horror is polarizing.
Sure.
And it speaks to, I know when I saw It Follows, I kept sort of chalking it up to horror being like comedy and that what makes me laugh won't make you
right,
laugh.
Right.
And that for whatever reason, Babadook touched me on a much more primal level than It Follows did. But I can easily imagine someone having the opposite reaction.
Right.
That it's almost becoming a touchstone in the early 21st century that it's not great unless there's people who hate it, unless it splits the audience down the middle. On the other hand, can you think of a horror film in the last 10 years that everyone has just loved?
No. I mean, I think The Conjuring was pretty universal. There are people who don't love The Conjuring, of course, but I feel like that was one that wasn't as polarizing, maybe because
it was also more mainstream.
Well, exactly. And I think that was it. It was just like, it was kind of a safer movie, and it was very well done. I'm not knocking The Conjuring at all, but I feel like even the people that didn't like it, there was nothing in it to like repel them in a way. There was nothing they were really reacting against. It was just like, yeah, it wasn't for me. It wasn't scary. It was boring, whatever it was that they felt. And I know that there are people who don't like it, but it didn't push you in that way that I think some of the horror movies that you and I both really love do. And I think anytime a movie does that, you're going to get people who just want to push back, you know, because they don't like it. And so they want to, I don't know.
But it also makes me think that people who really, really love horror films are dicks.
How
that,
so?
That we're not capable of rational discourse, that we engage in hyperbole, that as you had pointed out, it quickly became on the internet. It was like an election. Babadook versus It
yeah,
Follows.
Yeah, very
10
weird.
Rounds.
Right.
Two films enter, one film leaves.
I mean, I think that's, I think you can extend that beyond horror films and just people who are crazy passionate about movies, period, because that's what we do, right? We want to champion our own movies and defend our opinions and tell you you're wrong for not liking the thing that we like. And, because I find with horror films, over the weekend I was trying to write a column for something, And the purpose of the column is to choose a horror film that people don't like and defend it and say, no, it's actually secretly good. And that's very hard to do. And maybe part of that is just because I'm out of touch. But every time I think of something like, oh, what about this? Here's a movie that I like that I don't think a ton of people do. I would stop myself. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 comes to mind. I was like, I really love that movie. And I think maybe people don't. And I was like, no, you know what? I think everyone's kind of come around on that movie. And now people like it, or Life Force, or any of these movies. Every horror movie has a fan base.
Yes.
And so it's very hard to find one that nobody likes, but that you still do. You know, if like there's horror movies that nobody likes, but they don't like them because they're shit. Like, I'm not going to stand up for something that's just garbage, you know?
In the words of Stephen King, the work of morons with cameras. At the end of the day today, I was having a sort of spirited conversation with a student who, I don't know why, but he went to see Spring Breakers when it originally came out. And he was going on and on about how much he hated it.
Yep.
And, that it really had a passionate hate and how useless as a piece of art he thought it was. And I sat there and nodded my head and sort of decided against trying to argue with him about right. what I took from the film. But what was most interesting about the exchange was this proves that opposites attract, because he's one of the characters in Spring Breakers.
Oh.
I mean, he is.
Interesting.
Like, a borderline dangerous sociopath.
Okay.
Who you could easily picture playing any of the main roles. And I'm like, oh, you hated it. So you were on the screen,
right,
and you didn't like what you saw. I guess I am in the education business. Excuse me, edumacation
there
business.
There you go. I'll talk quickly about a few things that I saw. I watched a documentary on Netflix called Showrunners, which is exactly what it sounds like, a bunch of interviews with people that run TV shows. And it's interesting in the way that it's like, hey, TV's really good now, and now we can sort of, I think 20 years ago you couldn't really apply, and nobody was interested in applying the auteur theory to television. You know, it was just shows just showed up, and they were written in writers' rooms, but now we have all these television auteurs where it's like, oh, David Chase created this show? Well, I'm going to watch it. Vince Gilligan is the showrunner on this show? I'm going to watch
Ooh,
it.
Chuck Lorre? I think I'll avoid this.
I will pass. And it talked to a wide variety of people, and it's like, it seems like a fun job to write on a TV show, and unless you're the showrunner, and then it seems like a really hard and stressful job because it's just this monster that constantly has to be fed, you know? But it was pretty lightweight and not particularly revealing. Like, I wasn't bored, but I don't know how strongly I can recommend it unless you're really interested in writing for television.
I'm beginning to think that the pool has really been diluted when it comes to documentaries, because on the one hand, I think the rise of reality television has made people more likely to want to seek one out.
Okay.
And there's been some really excellent documentaries in the last 10 years. But I also think that there are filmmakers, and I'm using that term loosely with quotation marks around it, who think that documentaries are very easy to do.
Yeah.
This, coupled with the fact that, well, just this year so far, I think The Jinx sort of raised the bar
sure.
in a lot of ways.
Sure.
About what, so when a mediocre one comes out, it sticks out. What you were saying about Showrunner reminded me of An Honest Liar, a documentary that just came out about James Randi.
The movie that ruined It Follows for you, right?
Yeah. and it's really interesting because An Honest Liar would have been better if they had just focused on his career as a magician, and then later he wins the MacArthur Genius Grant and he starts debunking psychics. But they felt they needed a narrative. They thought they needed a through line. They thought they needed this sort of gotcha. But the gotcha doesn't really work,
yeah.
And it seems really contrived. And I was really disappointed by the film. I wish there were more excellent documentaries, although lately, I mean, just look at Netflix, there are certainly more documentaries.
Yeah.
Although recently on demand, I saw The Wrecking Crew, which is about this group of studio musicians who played on literally every hit
right.
of the 60s.
Right.
It was them. And the through line on that was the guitarist, who was this incredible guitarist. I mean, they play examples of his work, and it's like every single every single hook you've ever heard. Yeah, I just thought that up in the studio. Because the film was made by his son. And it was this very heartfelt Valentine to his dad.
Right.
But there's a great moment where I believe her name is Carol Kay. She's a bassist. She's the only female in the Wrecking Crew. Explains what they came into the studio with for The Beat Goes On by Sonny and Cher.
Okay.
And then she said, I listened to that and I decided to add this. And then she plays the thing that made it a hit record.
Right.
I would actually recommend The Wrecking Crew. It's also coming out on DVD very soon.
Oh, okay. Right on. There's a, going back to our conversation about horror from a few minutes ago, there is an unfortunate tendency going on these days because there were a few kind of, I don't want to call them fan documentaries, but I mean, they were made by fans of these films. So they made one about the Friday the 13th series. It's like 6 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
And they made the one about Nightmare on Elm Street, which, have you ever seen it?
I own both.
Never
I've
Sleep
watched
Again.
Neither.
Okay. Never Sleep Again is way better than the Friday the 13th one. The Friday the 13th one was disappointing to me, and they're made by the same people. You don't even have to love the Nightmare on Elm Street series to find Never Sleep Again fascinating, because they really talk to every single person, and it's such an interesting story. I really, really highly recommend it. I think it's on Netflix if you're listening and you haven't seen it. So those are met with some success, and now every franchise gets a documentary, and now it's not just a franchise, now it's just a film. So they're kickstarting a Fright Night documentary right now. It's like, I don't need to know. Twilight Time put out a disc. There are two commentaries on Fright Night. Tom Holland was on this show and talked a little bit about the making of Fright Night. You can find out about the making of Fright Night without having to watch a separate documentary. I cannot figure out the need for such a thing.
It seems like there's cynical amateur ones, and the two that I'm thinking of that were incredibly heartfelt is they wound up putting it on the American Werewolf in London disc.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy spent...
Beware the Moon? Is that what that one's called?
All of his own money,
yeah.
And spent years tracking these people down and sitting them down. And then there's a similar thing on the Jaws disc.
The shark is not working or something like
that?
The shark is still working.
That was fan-made.
Right.
And it seems like those two things come from very different places.
Yeah.
Although, from what I've read about the Friday the 13th documentary and the Nightmare on Elm Street, it really came from a place of obsessive love.
Yeah, you can tell.
But let's not have 20 more.
No, and it's not like every horror film that was ever enjoyed by people needs a side so now I have to watch the movie and it's documentary. Like, it's for some of them, I get it. When something was a legitimate phenomenon or went on for a long time or whatever, yeah, okay, maybe, but I just don't need a documentary about Fright Night. Anyway, I saw the remake of Annie. Okay, so
I'm nonplussed.
So here's how that goes. Sometimes on Fridays, after I take my son to his piano lesson, we go to what's called special lunch, which is basically us going to Wendy's because he likes getting a Frosty. So he eats a couple chicken nuggets and some apples and gets a small Frosty. So we're sitting there eating, and part of the kids' meal, the tie-in is with the remake of Annie. So he's looking at it and okay, because he saw a version of it on stage at where Erica teaches. So he was familiar with the music. So he said, oh, I wish I could see that movie. I said, you know what, Charlie, I actually think it's out on DVD. Why don't we go to Redbox? So I took Charlie to a Redbox, rented Annie, came home, he watched it. He watched it four times that weekend.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Listen, I don't even love the original Annie. I think some of the songs are good. There's a few performances that are fun. I think it's interesting just because it's made by John Huston, and so that's a curiosity. I don't think the movie is particularly great. Either is this one. A lot of people were very upset that they had sort of updated it and made it urban, in quotes, and they didn't. I mean, there are black people in the cast. I don't know if that counts as being urban.
And the Daddy Warbucks character is still bald.
Yes, but as a weird throwaway joke that doesn't work at all. A lot of people are in different movies. The little girl who was so good in
Beasts of the Southern Wild
is out of her depth a little bit in the Annie remake. Cameron Diaz is in a very different, very broad, very terrible movie. The one thing that I would point to as working is actually I thought the songs were good in that they took a lot of the original songs and then kind of updated them. And I know people are rolling their eyes as I say that. The artist Sia is her name. She's bouncing around the room in the video, and she was on Saturday Night Live. She won't show her face. I don't know. She's a giant weirdo. Anyway, she's talented, and she collaborated on updating the songs. And so I thought they found a really nice balance of what the original songs from the Broadway show sounded like, and then it'll like kind of segue into a chorus or something that sounds very contemporary, very much like something that you would hear on the radio, without, I don't think, betraying the spirit of the original song.
What did Charlie say he liked about it?
He just wanted to keep watching it. I do not know. I don't know. He was into it. So I saw it a bunch. I would kind of come and go, but you know, whatever. And then the last thing I'll talk about very quickly is I got to see Gone with the Pope, which is Duke Mitchell's follow-up to Massacre Mafia Style. I talked about it a few weeks ago. Grindhouse Releasing just put it out on Blu-ray, and it's been out on DVD from them a couple years ago. It came out a couple years ago, but this was like a lost film, basically. He shot a bunch of the film and then didn't really edit much of it together, and then died in like 1980 or 81. And so there were just cans of film sitting in his son's garage. And they were found, and Bob Murawski from Grindhouse Films said, "Hey, can I finish it?" And his son said, "Yeah, sure." He gave him all the stuff. And so Bob Murawski, who is an Oscar-winning editor, he edited The Hurt Locker and won an Oscar for it with his wife, cut together the film and basically finished it. And they put it out in 2010, and now it came out on Blu-ray. You can tell that it was kind of an unfinished film because there's long stretches that are sort of patched together via like a musical montage and stuff. But it's a lot of fun. And, you know, Duke Mitchell is, I think I said this about Massacre Mafia Style, he's not a born filmmaker, but you can still feel like this burning need to tell this story and make this movie. He's kind of like a version of Ed Wood. I mean, he's more talented than Ed Wood, but when you watch Ed Wood movies, I mean, they're sort of incompetent, but there's so much passion coming through them that you can't help but love them. And Duke Mitchell has some of that. And the movies are seedier and more violent. And the plot of the movie is that they kidnap the Pope. These five criminals kidnap the Pope, and the ransom that they charge is $1 from every Catholic in the world, which is just the greatest scheme for a movie. I had a lot of fun with it, and if you have a chance, I recommend it if you're a fan of these kinds of movies.
You know what this sounds like for all the world, because I'm rereading the Tim Lucas Mario Bava.
Rereading?
Yes.
Wow.
And his last film was unfinished. I think the funding ran out. It sat in cans. He passed away, and then 14 years later, it was unearthed and sort of stitched together. It's called Rabid Dogs.
Okay.
It's about a robbery gone bad, and it's famous because it almost completely takes place in a car.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. I have not seen it. I want to see it very badly.
Bava ends up being kind of hit or miss. I think I haven't seen all the right ones, because every time I find one on Netflix and I try to watch it, I'm like, this probably isn't one of the good ones, right? I mean, the ones that I've seen that are good, Black Sabbath, Black Sunday, okay, great. But some of the ones I've seen, I don't know, count as being the good ones.
He's an acquired taste. In fact, what was it that... is it Twice Told Tales? The one with the wine tasting.
That's Tales of Terror.
Tales of Terror was released on Blu-ray last week. And the audio commentary is Tim Lucas.
Oh, right.
I haven't listened to it yet, but he does crazy obsessive audio commentary.
He was on Facebook last week complaining about reviewers who say bad things about commentaries. So maybe somebody gave his commentary a bad review because he was saying like, yeah, those you shouldn't comment on.
No, I've really enjoyed his. And if any of our listeners have $600 lying around, Lucas,
send it to us.
Lucas and his lovely wife have just digitized all 175 issues of Video Watchdog. And I'm not sure. I don't think you're downloading them. I think it's giving you access to stream them.
For $600?
Onto a device. It's $600. And I got to tell you, around Christmas, I got an email because I'm on their email list because I subscribe to their important publication, Video Watchdog. And they were having a half price sale. And I so wish I had done it.
Yeah.
I really do. Because what I'm finding is I have this book of his. The book, which is this, Patrick's seen it. It's just enormous.
It's insane.
But he made it available as a digital file for your tablet or your Kindle at a reasonable price. And that's how I'm reading it because it's so much easier to read it when you can make the text bigger and just swipe the page with your finger.
How reasonable of a price?
I think it was somewhere between 25 and 50.
Oh, that's pretty reasonable.
Because originally, I had signed up for the book, and he was taking orders for the book a crazy amount of time before the book was ready.
You waited years, if I'm not mistaken.
And then the book was delayed, and there were people who were like, you know, I don't think this is your rent money. Just be patient. And one of the things we got is we're actually listed in the book.
Right.
I'm in the book.
That's like early Kickstarter, kind of.
Yeah, as a patron. And I didn't mind waiting, because what I finally got was...
It's crazy.
And he and his wife sort of digitized his entire Bava archive and cleaned things up. And I would say they look even better on my iPad than they look printed in the book. It just pops.
Yeah.
So that's a book recommendation. And Tim, if you're listening, I'm a public high school teacher. I would really like that digital archive. And in return, I can get you a limited edition Blu-ray copy of Violetta.
Nice callback.
The one with the violets.
I'm adding the gunshots every time. Real quick, I want to get in a plug for something. I should have brought it up when you brought up the music box, and then we'll actually get into talking about what we're going to talk about. Coming up, if you live in or near Chicago, May 1st through May 6th, or through the 7th.
Go to the website. I think it's the 7th.
I'm a terrible person. It's the 7th. May 1st through the 7th at the Music Box Theater is the Chicago Critics Film Festival. I've gone the last 2 years just as a fan because I get to see stuff that I probably wouldn't have seen otherwise. Both of the past 2 years, I've seen some of my favorite movies of that year.
It's incredible. He went the first year and
first year was just a couple. It was like a weekend.
And I didn't see anything that I liked. And then Patrick reviewed all the films that he saw. And then over the next couple months, I caught them other ways. And they were all outstanding. And then last year, I went to a bunch of screenings.
Yeah.
And every single one of them was whoever curates that does a very good job.
Yeah. So that's going on. And you really, really owe it to yourself to go if you live, again, in or near Chicago. They're showing the new Joe Swanberg movie, Digging for Fire. So now I'm a member, I should disclose. I was accepted as a member last year. I'm not shilling this. As a member of the Chicago Film Critics Association, I'm shilling this as a fan of movies who has seen a ton of great movies at this festival.
Patrick Bromley is paid for this endorsement.
So the new Joe Swanberg movie, Digging for Fire, Raiders, the Raiders of the Lost Ark fan recreation documentary that just showed, I think it's South by Southwest, Slow West, the new Michael Fassbender Western.
A new documentary about the original National staff Lampoon. Of the Lampoon.
Yeah. The End of the Tour, which is the new James Ponsoldt movie about David Foster Wallace. The Overnight, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which won the Audience Award at Sundance. So there's a lot of really good stuff coming up. I was hoping for like one or two more horror films, only because last year their midnight movies were Housebound and Dead Snow 2, and both of those are so much fun that I would have loved more of that. But a lot of good stuff coming up.
And Dead Snow 2 was the first time that this movie was ever part of a trailer.
That's right.
Which was huge.
Let's talk about that.
Let's pretend that 2014 never happened.
All right.
And say that this year is pretty much going the way the year goes. And we may have talked about this 2 years ago, but I don't know if we did. I see this more as a marketing thing than anything else, that we're evolving towards three movie seasons. January is where we let the country catch up on all of the awards-worthy films that came out around Christmas but didn't open wide, and so a lot of people have to wait to see them until January. Plus, you don't really want to open anything big in January because the weather can...
Well, and I thought you were about to say it was when we let the country catch up on housework, reading, because nothing comes out.
And then, traditionally, February was a junk pile that nothing good got released in February. And then it seems that we're expanding the summer movie season, which you had commented on, that it keeps getting earlier and earlier. Would you agree that this year the summer movie season has already begun?
In theory, it's not supposed to start until Avengers Age of Ultron on May 1st, and yet we've released a movie that has made over $1 billion, which really only happens with the summer movies.
Oh, you should have seen it. It was so cute. Patrick put his little finger to his mouth.
What?
And it was, I did not. It was kind of like a Dr. Evil thing?
No.
In any case, so we have January catch-up.
Right.
February junk pile. Soon, March will be the beginning of the summer movie season.
Basically. Next year, Batman Superman comes out in March.
I thought that summer used to end in July, but Guardians of Galaxy proved me wrong on that. So we have this incredible summer season where, as you said, every weekend has a tentpole.
Yes.
And then we might be fallow for a couple weeks.
We get a break in September, usually.
And then it's awards-worthy movies.
Yes, although even that has dried up a little bit because now what happens is holiday season, which is really just summer part two. This year we're getting Star Wars, around the holidays. That the awards movies, it used to be very much a fall thing. Now it seems like they kind of come out late September and October, and then they go away. And then, like you said, you can't see the rest of them until January because November and December are turned over to, the Disney family movie and the animated children's film, whatever it is, that November and December are just big holiday movies.
And last weekend, apparently, 10 million people watched the new Star Wars trailer on YouTube.
Yeah.
And every single person I've talked to pretty much had the same reaction to the last shot, that it gives you chills and it makes you cry and it makes you want to see the movie. I think there's going to be like riots and bloodshed when that film opens.
Devin Faraci the other day tweeted out that earlier this year, his theory was that Avengers and Star Wars were going to kind of be neck and neck. But now he knows it will be Star Wars by a billion.
As much as I want to see it first so things don't get spoiled for me, I think I'm going to wait a couple years. Because I just can't imagine 10 million people trying to see it the first weekend.
No,
and
well,
that's really the effect that trailer's having.
But the same thing, and I'm not saying this is going to be Phantom Menace, but we were all hypered into a frenzy for Phantom Menace. A lot of people were, right? And I remember it opened on like a Wednesday, and I thought the same thing. I'm not going to go near the theater. So Friday morning, I was like, I'll give it a shot. Oh, it's fine. So I saw it. So Friday night, I was going to the movies with Doug, and I was like, yeah, but we're not doing Phantom Menace because it's going to be nuts. It's Friday of the opening weekend, we're not going to get near that movie. Let's go see whatever other movie had opened. And we got there, and there's no one at the theater. So we said, well, can we go see Phantom Menace? I said, sure. So I ended up sitting through that goddamn movie twice in one day. So there's hope. With the number of screens it will be playing on, perhaps we'll be able to get near the theater.
And remember, my son was a rabid Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
Because I force-fed him the laser discs of the original trilogy at a very young age.
Yeah.
So when Phantom Menace came out, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And I still remember going to see that.
Did he like it?
I don't remember. I think, in all honesty, and Jake, give me a call if I'm misremembering this.
Call your dad, Jake.
Call me.
Call him.
I'm so lonely. He was most excited for the fact that there were new toys.
Sure.
And there were a lot of new toys from the Phantom Menace.
I meant to ask Mike and Adam Thaws if they would be going out at midnight again this year, because that was their big thing. When Phantom Menace toys were released, they were there at midnight.
And they made a video.
They did, yeah. They ran it as a column 1 week.
Okay, I'm still
trying to remember that. How would I have seen that video?
So I'm looking at my list,
yes,
of what I've seen so far this year, and from January 7th, apparently after Christmas, I have a hangover and I don't go to a movie for a week. It's all catch up stuff.
Okay.
Until February 14th.
Oh.
When I go see Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Okay.
Which I liked quite a bit.
It's one of the better things I've seen this year. I think the only before that, I think the only movies that I would even bring up would be I saw Black Hat, mm-hmm. which I bring up only because at the end of the year, I think it's going to make some worst of lists. I think it's going to be talked about as like an insane bomb because I think it made like $10 million on a budget of probably well over 100.
I was just reading a website today about the 10 biggest flops this year okay. so far.
Yeah.
And the 10 films that have lost the most have lost 100 or 150 million more than the similar grouping of films from the beginning of last year.
Oh, okay, got it.
So Black Hat, Jupiter Ascending.
Ooh, yeah.
There were three others they've lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I remember you kind of like Black Hat.
As a Michael Mann fan,
would you say the film is manic?
My big review is like, hey guys, it's not that bad. And it's not that great. It got so hammered when it came out and I went to see it and I thought, it's not that much different from a lot of his other movies that have been much more favorably received. So I understand we all take issue with the fact that dreamy Chris Hemsworth is playing a super hacker. But that's because we don't ever need to see a super hacker in another movie ever again.
That's true. The first time I ever saw the trailer, a couple things got laughs, and then a couple weeks later, there was a new trailer.
Yeah. Oh,
so
okay.
I was wondering if movie spies did their work.
It's not great, but I'm guessing when we get to the end of the year and we do our underrated show, that's going to be on my list just because it was so hated, and I thought it was kind of okay, kind of good.
So frequently, this year so far, my wife and I love to go to the movies, and there were weekends where there really wasn't anything to see. So like I said, I've been catching up on archival stuff on disc. And also, between Cinemark theaters doing classic matinees on the weekends and on Wednesday night,
yeah,
and of course, the Elk Grove Cinema by our house, showing a classic film with an introduction and discussion afterward by a member of the Chicago Film Critics Association.
Come in August, see The Breakfast Club.
Are you?
I'm doing The Breakfast Club in August.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I am, yes.
Is this a good thing?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Everybody come out.
Because in all honesty, Mr. Bromley doesn't like to toot his own horn, but I think I've been to every single one so far but two. I think they've been doing it for about a year. So in February, they showed The Godfather, and it's always great to see The Godfather on a big screen, and it was a better print or a better projection than the last time I saw The Godfather on a big screen. And then in March, our own Patrick did Blazing Saddles. And that sort of showed because the night before we did the podcast.
That's right.
And we were saying all these things. And then we saw it with a big audience, which gave lie to
right.
some
oh,
of the
for
things
sure.
we said on the podcast.
Yeah.
That movie plays
yeah.
to a crowd. That was sort of amazing to see. And a week or two ago, they showed The Untouchables, which I hadn't seen in a dog's age.
Yeah.
And had actually misremembered parts of it. So it was like seeing a brand new film. I didn't remember that there are some people who don't make it to the end.
Right.
And was honestly surprised. When I first saw it, I didn't realize Patricia Clarkson plays his wife.
Yeah.
And I'd completely forgotten that the score is by Ennio Morricone.
Yep.
And it's very Morricone.
He's writing the score for Violetta, correct?
We're trying to coax him out of retirement. I would like there to be some harmonica in the Violetta.
I like it.
He is the one with the violets.
You are really selling me on this movie.
It's true. And then I've spoken of Chappie.
Yes, you have.
I know.
I'm a very popular of this movie meme.
I don't think we...
was your Chappie breakdown, I believe, is how it came to be known.
I don't
People
wanna,
just thought you were losing your shit.
I don't want to talk about Chappie anymore.
I didn't see Chappie. I don't know what it is about this year. I have not seen as many movies as I usually would have at this point. I don't know if it's harder for me to get out or if it's like... I don't feel like I've missed anything that I really wanted to see.
That's the big thing.
Right, but I'm usually the guy who's like, but I wouldn't know unless I saw it, right? Because I wanted to see Focus with Will Smith. It probably isn't great. I wanted to see it. I wanted to see Jupiter Ascending. I can't believe I didn't see it.
I was surprised that you didn't go see that.
It was like the weekend of F This Movie Fest, and then just life gets away from me. I didn't see Chappie. I wanted to see Chappie, even after I heard it was not good. But I just have not seen as much this year, and it's a bummer.
And I'm assembling the films I have seen so far this year into sort of a list of what I liked and what I didn't like. But now I have a third category, and it speaks to what you were just talking about. And the category is called No. So it's the weekend. We want to go to the movies. 50 Shades of Grey. No.
Yeah.
No.
I didn't go.
Focus. No.
No.
Taken 3. No.
Nope,
Paul Blart 2. No. Mordecai. No.
One of my other gigs is with About.com, and one of the things that I end up doing is, because it gives me a chance to write about movies, I usually will go see the garbage movies starring comedians.
I was really surprised today.
I had planned for it in my weekend, and then it got to be, it was very difficult to make the time to go see Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, and I really said, why am I going to make the time? Like, why am I going to kill myself to squeeze in a screening of Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 so that I, too, can pile on with everyone else? And I'm not giving a bad review of it because I didn't see it, but it is that rare movie that currently holds a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And I really think at this point the studio missed their chance, because just bear me out on this. I had a way to make the sequel into something.
Okay.
But no one would listen to me.
All right.
So tell me what you think about
this.
My version would have been called Two Paul Blarts, : Mall Cops, and he's cloned.
Okay.
So now there's two Paul, not Paul Blart, Mall
it.
Cop 2.
I got
two
it.
Paul Blarts. Now, wouldn't that be better? In my
Maybe.
Version, in my version, he runs into himself.
It sucks, because every time I have to go see one of these movies, it's The Wedding Ringer, it's Hot Tub Time Machine 2, it's Get Hard, every kind of, I won't say every studio comedy, but every comedy that comes out that stars kind of a stand-up comedian or a sketch comedian or something, it's almost always terrible.
And I look forward to those, but I have a little story for you.
Yes.
I am meeting two friends in that Rosemont Entertainment District, and I decide to go there right from school, and I'm halfway there, and they send me a text, we got to push it to later. Well, now I'm here, and I'm parked.
Yeah.
So I went to see Get Hard.
Okay.
Here's my problem.
Okay.
Not only is it racist and homophobic.
Correct.
Which it is.
Big time.
Right.
Yeah.
But I remember when comedies at least would have people in them.
Okay.
That would behave. I'm sitting there, and I don't think it was the mood I was in. They're not even cartoon characters. They're the way, like, a dangerously damaged person would see the world or portray human beings. I mean, they're not recognizable human beings. They're not even exaggerations. It's just, this scene requires this to be the truth of life. And then in another scene, we can completely subvert that. I mean, it's either made... I was trying to imagine who would enjoy it.
Right.
And the person... No offense. The person who would enjoy Get Hard is a person that I'm worried about and scared of.
All right.
Like the also, this is MovieCo, which is one of those things with the balcony where they charge you more and you can eat and drink and stuff. And they converted one of the theaters to be MovieCo XL. It's their cheap-ass version of IMAX.
Got it.
The screen is bigger, but the hall itself is much bigger, and there's a lot more seats.
Okay.
I think this was 5 o'clock on a weekday. I am alone.
Yeah.
And not just in the balcony. The bottom.
Yeah.
It was a screening for me.
Yeah.
When you went, were there people there?
There were. They laughed. People laughed. I mean, I wouldn't say it brought the house down, but people definitely laughed. And I remember having that reaction at the end of The Wedding Ringer, which also starred Kevin Hart. And I would argue he's not the problem with either movie. I know that people are not fans, but...
Although I did sort of object, there's a scene in Get Hard where they're on a tennis court, and this
Oh my gosh.
This is obviously meant to be the
big
tour de force.
I wrote about this in my review,
Where he's three different people, and it's just so obvious and hacky.
And racist.
It seems in high school, there's this thing called speech team, and one of the events is...
humorous interpretation.
HI, where one student badly portrays several different characters with exaggerated voices.
Or plays several different characters, the seventh best in state. Hello.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot that Patrick was in that
event. Only six better.
It seemed
like... Kevin Hart was one of them.
It seemed like a really bad HI.
Oh, yeah.
And...
Yeah, no, it's clearly engineered to be that thing. And then on top of it, it's completely dependent on broad racist and homophobic stereotypes. And so you can't even laugh because you're too busy being kind of repelled by the movie's worldview.
I would laugh, but I'm shuddering. And on the film's 20th anniversary, that's the scene they will show.
Perhaps. Perhaps. I can't wait for all the BuzzFeed think pieces about the 20-year anniversary of
Get
Hard.
On the 20th anniversary of Get Hard, that's the scene that the aliens will show to demonstrate to the now enslaved human beings how they realize they could take over pretty easily if this is what we regarded as entertainment.
What is the last funny Will Ferrell movie?
Good Lord.
Anchorman was 11 years ago.
And it's, you know, I compare, in the world of comedy, I compare Will Ferrell to Elvis. Because John Lennon once said, the tragedy of Elvis is that he was the king, but they will chain you to the throne because too many people are dependent for their living on Elvis staying exactly what he was. So Will Ferrell starts out in movies and he's something different. And he's something I would suggest very funny. And then look how quickly it just becomes.
Well, and I would argue that that happens. I think I figured this out around, I was writing a thing about Jim Carrey. And it was just kind of like, wait, what happens to all of these guys? Because the same phenomenon happens. You do one or two things and it's like, oh, you're different. You are a breath of fresh air. And then it's just the same movie after again and again and again until the next new guy comes along and you say, okay, you're a little bit different. And then he just makes the same movie five more times.
And you know, how can you make it a brand? And it really makes you appreciate the first person that comes to mind is Woody Allen, who I think resisted that for a while and really makes you appreciate the breadth of his career and how he never made Annie Hall 2. Because I can't imagine what that would be.
Have you seen the trailer for the new Zach Galifianakis and Kristen Wiig and they like kidnap or it looks miserably unfunny. And he's another one who he comes along in, I think The Hangover was really where most people saw him for the first time and is like, oh, this guy's a little bit offbeat. He's new and funny. And now every movie he does, you're just sick of him by now. You know, you're not excited to see him show up in comedic stuff, at least.
Well, I turned to my wife, my lovely wife, the other night, and I said, remember Due Date? We saw that. And she said, no.
Yeah, right.
And I said, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
The film exists to, what's the verb? it's sparkly and it holds your attention for 90 minutes and then it disappears.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to mention, though, and this, I think, might just be the highlight of the year so far.
All right.
On your recommendation.
Oh, boy.
I want to see this movie very badly. And then, lo and behold, it shows up at our local multiplex. And Jan and I go to see it. And wonder of wonder, miracle of miracles, it's in the center. The center is the big theaters with the big screens. And we're like, has there been a mistake made? I believe by the end of the weekend, they had moved it to another screen.
I would imagine so.
But the film I'm talking about is What We Do in the Shadows. And talk about a film that not only I thoroughly enjoyed, and if any of you see it, you'll watch it and go, oh, well, this is right up JB's alley. But it stayed with me.
Okay.
And I keep thinking about it very fondly. And I think it does a bunch of different things really well. It's really clever.
Yeah.
And I actually saw it with a handicap. I don't know how I got this idea. I think I may have misread your review or read a review and sort of amplified one of the things in the review. When I went to see it, I thought it was a musical.
Oh. That would be distracting when you keep waiting for them to break into song.
Well, there's that one song over the opening credits that's okay. Actually funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think because of Jermaine Clement,
sure.
I kept expecting, well, that was quickly ditched. I would have to say that's my favorite movie of the year so far.
Okay. I don't know if it's a function of my shifting tastes. I mean, I think even since we started F This Movie a few years ago, I've gotten... My taste runs way more towards like genre stuff now over mainstream. I've always been a fan of horror movies and action movies, all that kind of stuff. But now it's like that's really what I gravitate towards, even over kind of big Hollywood movies. And I mention that only because the only things that I've seen this year that I've liked so far have been kind of smaller. A lot of times like stuff that plays on VOD and those kind of iTunes releases. What We Do in the Shadows, It Follows. Which technically never got a VOD release, but for some reason I thought it did Spring, which I think is really worth checking out.
You know, I got to see It Follows in a theater.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And which I'm happy about.
I think it would actually be a lot better in a theater, yeah. I think it's a movie that deserves to be seen in a theater.
I think the younger people who I saw it with were, what's the word? I think it was really working on them in ways that they found very uncomfortable.
Which is great. That's fun. I mean, that's a...
No, that's what the film is trying to do.
Yeah.
I was canoodling around on the internet today, and I found a website that told you how much money all of the 2015 releases have made. And it's probably...
Separately or, like, all together?
Separately.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because I know it's at least a billion. If it's all together, I know it's 1 billion, and then everything else combined has made about 200 million.
He makes a joke. Violetta. The one with the violence.
So they could actually improve this website because they have a lot of films that carry over from 2014, but they only report how much money they've made in 2015, which sort of skews it. But here's an interesting fact that I derived from this website. When Shorts HD... release the Oscar-nominated shorts to theaters.
Yes.
I know I went to one of the programs and was amazed at how poorly attended it was, and then discovered that they were on demand, and so watched the rest of them at home. The Oscar-nominated shorts released to theaters before the Academy Awards made more money than Cake and Top 5 combined.
For real? I thought Top 5 did pretty well, actually.
I was amazed. Now, what year did Top 5 come out?
I think that's technically last year.
Then maybe that's why.
I think it was like a November movie.
Because the... Okay, that's why.
Okay.
Because the majority... See, that's what I didn't like about this chart.
Yeah.
I was also looking over all the movies released, and I don't mean this as racist, but...
Let me tense every muscle in my body.
Well, you know, I should really learn not to do that, because if I know anything, I know that when someone says
nothing
I'm
not
no
racist,
racist
ever but, follows that sentence ever.
Will you be the judge and jury?
Oh shit.
The film's black or white, McFarland USA, and Spare Parts to me seem like the same movie.
Okay.
Maybe because their trailers are so similar. More McFarlane and Spare Parts. Those films are cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
That
so we, Black or White and McFarlane, I think you're confusing your Costner.
Yes.
And then the other two, you're confusing your sports dramas.
Well, I think there's a robotics competition or something.
Oh, is that what Spare Parts is?
Yeah.
I forget. I've seen like the cardboard standee. I haven't seen a trailer.
Again, I'm going by the trailers, but need to make some effort. I'm wondering who is inside the theater for the second best Marigold Hotel.
I don't know. They were also, I think if you bought a ticket, you also got half off of a funeral plot.
Oh,
not
okay.
A funeral, but cemetery plot. Forget it. I couldn't make the joke land because I'm an idiot.
I was going to say that with your ticket to the second best Marigold Hotel, you get something to eat that's very easy to chew.
That's a better joke, see? Better joke.
Because you think that Judi Dench is a hoot.
all right, I'm going to blow your mind for a second, because as you're talking about this, I'm pulling up 2015 in film, just on Wikipedia, because I wanted to look ahead and see, like, well, what's coming out that we're excited about? And at the top, they have the 10 highest grossing films of the year thus far. Now, remember, these are the global box office totals. These are mm-hmm. not domestic. And
right.
This is why the fucking game has completely changed now, because what we think happens in this country has nothing to do with what goes on in the rest of the world.
And why dialogue doesn't matter.
Yep.
And it's actually a plus that there aren't a lot of scenes where people sit around and bare their souls in Furious 7.
Right. So Furious 7, obviously number one, over $1 billion.
With
worldwide
a bullet.
Success.
Literally.
Star Wars, I think, may be the only thing that tops it, but I don't even know. Who knows? 50 Shades of Grey, number two. Okay, obviously. Over half a billion worldwide.
Wow.
Cinderella, number three.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kingsman, The Secret Service, number four. Pleasant surprise. That movie's fun. I have some problems with it.
I would argue that one of the reasons that happened is that there were two different trailers, and they were both really good. They were exceptional trailers.
I want to know part of that movie. Like, I was not interested in seeing it, and I went to see it opening day, and I thought that was a lot of fun.
I think new films in that genre have a hard time sort of establishing their shelf space. But I don't think it's the greatest action film I've ever seen, but I was entertained.
I struggle with that church scene. I'm having a hard time with that. Amazingly shot, but...
Yeah, and certainly a sort of a callback to some of his other films.
Yeah.
But
I struggle with some of the implications of that scene.
I just thought the point was that in the reality of the film, that thing gets out of hand.
Sure. There might have just been a...
But no, it's... I mean, I'm no shrinking violet.
Excuse me, what did you just say, gringo?
You're starting to sound like Doug's impression of the Beast.
I'm no shrinking violet.
You mean Violetta. The one with the shrinking violets.
So Taken 3 is in fifth place.
Wow.
Followed by the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water.
I gotta say, and I love my wife more than anything else, I wanted to see that. I really wanted to see that. She wants no part of SpongeBob.
Followed by Home.
I thought the two different types of animation looked like when they're under the water, it's one, and then
right.
they... And Antonio Banderas is in it as some pirate bad guy.
All right. Home is next. No surprise there.
Wow.
People took their kids. It is as generic as kids' movies come. The Divergent series, Insurgent, is next. Although I think the grosses are way down from the first movie that no one liked, and now they made a sequel that no one liked that made less. So maybe they stop there, but I'll bet they don't. Because remember, they made it to like four or five Narnia movies. Number nine, Jupiter Ascending. So there's where the rest of the world factors in.
True, but the budget on that was so big.
Absolutely. It has made less than $200 million, but not by much. It's made over $180 million worldwide. Now, a very expensive movie, but we're all saying, oh, that movie took such a bath, and it didn't.
Maybe there is hope for the Wachowskis yet. Remember Side by Side?
Yes.
We did a podcast on
it. I do remember.
It's the least listened to podcast.
No, I think that was, I think people like that one.
I showed it to one of my
the podcast?
Class.
People, no. They're supposed to listen to it.
I showed the film.
If you just show it to them, it doesn't do anything.
I showed the film to one of my classes as an example of documentary.
Okay.
And one of the things they liked the most, besides the fact that Keanu is an ingratiating interviewer in that works really well, is what the Wachowskis have to say. It was interesting to watch them watching the documentary.
Okay. Number 10. You ready for it? From Vegas to Macau 2. And he's making a face, trying to remember if he's ever heard of that movie.
Is that a retitled thing that went out in the rest of the world under a different title?
I will click on it now, but I have...
Is it a Bollywood film?
It is a Chinese film that I've never heard of.
Will we be seeing it in this country?
I don't know. It is the first on-screen acting role for Angela Wang, the breakout child star of the hit documentary TV show Where Are We Going, Dad? This isn't real. This is a Christopher Guest movie. What's going on? So I didn't even know there was a From Vegas to Macau 1, but the sequel is one of the 10 highest-grossing films of the year worldwide.
Well, the one thing I did know is that From Vegas to Macau 1 left so many unanswered questions, you sort of had to.
Yeah. Bit of a cliffhanger.
You had to go.
Yeah.
No, literally, she's on a cliff. It's a cliche, but there
she says, "Where are we going, Dad?"
And he, who I don't want to give, this is a spoiler, he hates the little girl. His response is, "On a cliff. That's where you're going." And then he starts to step on her fingers.
Oh. Roll credits.
He starts to step on her fingers.
Looking ahead this year, can you think of anything that is still to come that you're super excited about? We're about to enter the summer season in a few weeks with Avengers Age of Ultron.
I don't know. I really like the first Avengers movie. I get the feeling that the second one is going to be really bloated. That it's just going to be 2.5 hours of...
It may be. I think reviews start to come out tomorrow.
And I like the characters, and I like the first one a lot. I don't know. I think, like you said earlier in the podcast, I'm actually looking forward to the Chicago Film Critics Association screenings more than I'm looking forward to a lot of the tent poles. Of course, now, because I have a heart and a memory, I'm very much looking forward to the new Star Wars movie, because good Lord.
Obviously, I was going to go see the new Star Wars movie, like, whatever. But when it was announced, all that stuff, I just was like, yeah, okay, fine. It's part of the pop culture. Of course, I'm going to go. But I wasn't, like, excited about a new Star Wars movie. And then that trailer came out, and I was like, oh, you got me. Okay, now I'm really excited about this movie.
Because whoever sat down at the conference room table and said, you know, people have tremendous affection for the original cast. We might be able to reclaim all that was lost with... Yeah. Those other ones. In fact, it makes me wonder why Lucas didn't make those three first.
Right.
And then go back.
Well, it's just as well. But even that shot that opens the trailer of the big ship buried in the sand is a great example of, like, visual storytelling. Within the first shot of the trailer, we know kind of where we're at in this universe and what has transpired. I mean, we don't know how the ship got there, but we get a sense of, like...
And the busted, decayed
Vader
helmet.
Right.
I mean, that's show, don't tell.
It's,
Which the prequels were.
Again, that opening shot of Super 8, I go back to, that J.J. Abrams is capable of being a great visual storyteller, because it's that accident sign at the opening of Super 8. That's visual storytelling.
You know what would be great, though, if we all get there on December 18th for the newest Star Wars movie, and it starts, and it's about a trade embargo, and it's just him grinding our faces.
No.
These films are about intergalactic commerce. Anyone who thinks otherwise is wrong.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Directed by George Miller.
I saw the trailer again, came on maybe last night, and... At the end, it says, you know, see it in real 3D or something. And I think My
well, that would involve going to Australia and actually being there.
My eyes can't process what's happening in 2D in that trailer. I mean, manic doesn't begin to describe it. So I just cannot conceive of seeing that movie in 3D. And maybe I'm wrong, but
The new issue of Esquire at least arrived at my house last weekend, and there's a long interview with Charlize Theron where she talks about what it was like to shoot that film.
Poltergeist remake? I saw the trailer before Furious 7, and it played very well with the audience, most of whom I'm guessing have no idea that it is a remake. And it may make, if that trailer and the response is any indication, it's going to make a bunch of money. And I don't know if that's true, because remakes a lot of times don't, but it might.
So that'll be another weekend where I spin some spaghetti westerns on the Blu-ray player.
Jurassic World?
I actually really want to see that. I know people have been a little jaded about the little plot twist they've introduced, but it's been such a long time since we've had a good one. I'm really excited to see that.
Sure. Ted 2.
I didn't see the first one.
Terminator Genesis? These aren't movies. I'm just making things up. Ant-Man?
That's got a really good trailer, but again, maybe because I read too much, I was so looking forward to
the Edgar Wright one.
Yeah. Yeah. That you know, that's, but you know, maybe
Mission Impossible Rogue Nation?
Now, I know something about this.
Okay.
Who directed it?
The guy that did Jack Reacher, Christopher McQuarrie.
Okay.
Oscar-winning screenwriter.
And is the trailer out yet?
Yeah, he's hanging onto the side of the airplane.
Oh, no. And you know, I have traditional antipathy towards Mr. Cruz, but Ghost Protz, I mean, that was... and of course, that's Brad Bird, but looking back, Ghost Protocol was like a highlight reel of the last 10 Mission Impossible movies that they never made. I mean, it just went from one to the next.
Yeah.
The shot that has everyone talking.
The airplane shot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a special effect, or did they?
No, he strapped himself to the side of a plane.
Okay. Because that's the way it looks.
Yeah. And that's the thing with Tom Cruise, again, is like, what's the craziest thing? I'll do it. Constantly needing to top himself. Brad Bird has a new movie coming out. Hard not to be excited about that, right? Tomorrowland. I know nothing about it.
I've seen a long trailer for that.
Okay.
I forget what it was.
I've been trying to avoid them for the most part.
It's very high concept.
Well, it's written by Damon Lindelof.
Right. And the minute I saw that. And also, there's a lingering feeling that they're once again just doing it to refurbish part of the park.
Right.
Oddly enough, someone we both know, another former student of mine, when he was going to film school, he wrote a script. I believe it might have actually been called Tomorrowland. That was excellent. He let me read it. And I was sort of disappointed when this came out, because I was like holding out hope that someday this would get made, because the former student, who both of us know, really had a sort of interesting take on how to turn that part of the theme park into a movie successfully.
Yeah.
Someone's remaking Haunted Mansion.
Guillermo del Toro, supposedly, who has a movie coming out later this year called Crimson Peak, which I'm excited about in theory. Gem and the Holograms coming out later this year. The Vacation reboot. Finally, we get to see Ed Helms as grown-up Rusty.
Oh my God.
In a movie no one was asking for. We got Star Wars later.
Beverly D'Angelo has had all this work.
Yeah.
And she looks like Lily Munster. Now, clearly what you do with your own face is your own business, but...
They released that photo of all of them together.
Yeah.
And she doesn't look like herself.
I looked at the picture on the internet, and in the back of my mind I was thinking, Dun 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 dun. There's two franchises they can combine.
Oh boy! Supposedly the Point Break remake is going to come out this year. Thank goodness for that. And I mean, there's a bunch of summer movies. Whatever. We're not going to go through them all. But late in the year, I think the two big ones are obviously Star Wars, but also The Hateful Eight, the new Tarantino movie.
Yes, and I was reading that he has brought back a film format for that.
70 millimeter,
but it's not just that.
Oh,
CinemaScope.
CinemaScope. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, it was my hope that perhaps I could see that at the Cinerama Dome in L.A., where that was really built
right.
widescreen films. And I've read a little bit about Hateful Eight, and I would have to say that that's probably the one film I'm most looking forward to.
Sure. Yeah. 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 It's a new Tarantino. How can you not be excited? That I'm actually more worried about getting tickets to than Star Wars, only because my guess is here in Chicago, the Music Box will be the only theater that's going to show it properly.
It might be the only theater left in the city that can still do 70.
Yeah, so I'll have to go see it there, and you know there's going to be just crazy lines for that.
Yes, it's got a great title.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's still enough movies that I'm excited about, and I'm sure, see, the thing is, the only things that are announced right now, for the most part, are these big tentpole movies. There's going to be a lot of smaller things that kind of are coming along that right now we don't even know that we're excited about. You know, our favorite movies of the year, we may not have even heard of yet. So there's stuff to look forward to, we just don't know it yet, so we're left with Gem and the Holograms and Vacation.
And staying home for the weekend. And watching spaghetti westerns.
Absolutely. Thank you guys very much for listening. Thanks, JB, for doing this. This is always fun.
Adios, Violeta.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.